Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb. The Thinking Fellows is part of the 1517 podcast network of shows. You can go to 1517.org/podcast to see all of our episodes there. Today, I am joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and by Dr. Adam Francisco to continue our Why You Should series. A little heads up to the listeners, we are all three recording by Zoom, which is not something we do very often. So if there's some technical hiccups, that is why. But we'll try to smooth out as many of those as we can. Today we're going to continue with sort of these fun topics, I suppose. Because Adam came up with this one immediately after some of the ideas that came out of our Why You Should Care About the World Wars episode. And so we're going to do Why You Should Be Aware of Secularism. And the thing with this is there is a lot of talk about secularism, living in a secular age, living in secular spaces. And even as we record this, the Queen of England died yesterday. And I was seeing people talk about that as sort of the hallmark bookend of the definitive end of any sort of Christendom.
Yeah, the last vestige of Christendom,
right,
is gone.
Comes to an end. And so this is perhaps very timely because we've been living with secularism for a long time, and now sort of the final symbol of a Christian age is gone. And so that's definitely interesting. Adam, this was your idea, so I'm going to hit you with the heavy question, which is, I think secularism, when this is posed in other podcasts or formats that I've heard, doesn't get defined clearly enough. It's just kind of assumed that everybody knows we're talking about just the non-religious or something like that. So can you go ahead and just outline what we will deal with as the definition of secularism on this show?
Yeah, well, that's a million-dollar question. And like you said, there's just a ton of conversation, scholarly and popular, around the theme of secularism, secularization, and so on. Secularism, I would, and maybe for the show, we'll just stick with this definition, is not just some acknowledgement that there's temporal space that is at least hypothetically neutral, free of the infringement of religion or theology or something like that, but rather secularism is an actual, like you call it an ideology or a worldview, that says there is no room ever for anything from God or theology or revelation. Secularism, I would say, is not necessarily like a Richard Dawkins type of atheism, but it's tantamount, very, very similar to an atheism. The big scholarly tome on this, though there are lots, but the most celebrated one is by Charles Taylor. It's called Our Secular Age. And I don't remember the page count, but it's an enormous book. I think over the course of like 10 years, I tried to start it and finish it maybe five different times. I finally did finish it. It's a complicated book, but what Taylor argues is he starts off by posing the question, something like, why is it that 500 years ago, around the time of like Martin Luther, nobody could have envisioned engaging in politics, moral thinking, everyday life, without some sort of reference or anchor to the divine? Why is it now, from 500 years later, we find it so difficult to connect the things in our public space to theology or to the divine? And the short answer is, well, we've slowly but surely, and his account is very different than sort of the 30,000 foot view that you'll get from sociology, but through a very long process, we've slowly but surely changed our view of the world, maybe not willingly, oftentimes not willingly, such that for us, all the stuff that really counts is that which is imminent, that which is in time and space. And life should be ordered around the temporal, finite things.
So,
yep, go ahead.
My question, and maybe even just a slight, I don't know if it's a disagreement, but like footnote, is that, and with this, is that this borderline is a synonym for materialism almost, but it doesn't, it appears to me that secularism has gotten past materialism, especially with a lot of the personal identity questions, the sexual orientation, transgender questions, is that it's not just materialism anymore, that it's sort of transcended the physical.
Yeah, you could, did we mention last time we talked, or over the last podcast, Carl Truman's book, A Strange New World?
I did, and I put it in the show notes of two episodes ago.
Okay. In his work, the work from which that abridged version comes, the Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, he effectively argues that in this sort of secular space, as it, because nature abhors a vacuum, there really is no neutral space. Mm. You know, we try to, in civil society, at least politely, pretend there's some sort of a neutrality. But really, when the rubber hits the road, there isn't neutrality. And so when we pretend, and at least the side that once dominated gives up ground to, you know, or gives up, pulls back from this public civil temporal space, immediately there are ideologies that come to fill it. And we could just call that, you know, basically kind of the secularism. But within this secularist arena, all sorts of thinkers and ideologies begin to emerge that lead to this triumph of this, the self, where every individual is effectively creates a world and an identity for themselves. It's no longer that the individual tries to conform to the will of God or to the will of nature or the order of nature, but now we all determine just what nature is individually. So to be sure, like you suggested from your question, secularism is no longer like the atheism that you and I think of, like Richard Dawkins or Anthony Flew back in the 20th century before he abandoned atheism, but it's now, it's almost like, practically speaking, it's anything but a theistic worldview.
Do you see maybe that it's like an accelerated history of Roman Catholicism to Protestantism, where there was sort of a scientific community, a priesthood that had access to this groundbreaking worldview that brings in secularism, kills God. And once that becomes popular and is in the popular language, it becomes an infinite sort of number of secular churches and people based on sort of what tenets are most important to them.
Yeah, I think in short, yes. And I think also let's say we pretend that there's this neutral secular space. And we as Christians sort of sit aloof of it. People by nature have this sort of natural disposition to grope after, to find something higher. If they're not allowed, if Christianity is not allowed to be that something higher, they're going to find something else. And I would argue that that's what just explains the rise of in popularity of ideology, is that people need something higher than just sort of like the horizontal plane. They need something to order their life around, whether it be kind of wokest type of stuff. I don't know if wokest is a real term, but if it isn't, I'm the one who coined it right here now.
If somebody else sells t-shirts, you're
some sort of new agey thing, you know, whatever it might be. That's the way I see it. I'd be curious to, I said this in an email last night that I sent to your dad about a totally different topic, but I'm curious to hear what he thinks about this.
I think there's a point at which you can see, you know, this arc of history. And I think we have to be careful here, because we oftentimes take our own experience sort of living in the last vestiges of what we called at the beginning Christendom, And we can certainly say, you know, maybe even the last vestiges of this, the West, that we think we can sort of take our experience with God, and especially in our circumstance, the three of us being Christians, and the fact that we really do, you know, a lot of the explanations about life and morality and everyday stuff have to do with the reality that God has given and ordained all things. And so we're influenced by that a lot. But human history it's maybe not as sort of influenced by Christendom as we think. If you look at the whole of history, you're looking at really the last 2,000 years in the West. But because that's our experience, that we sort of latch on to that.
And don't you think not only like our personal experience, but in a lot of cases, the space where the traditions and rules and laws that formed our society originally were forged, even if they weren't all Christian laws or the
no,
such.
No, they were. That's my point. If you look, before that, before the coming of Christ, you have sort of a mix of paganism, animism.
I mean, it's kind of like we're going backwards, right? I mean, a lot of the stuff we deal with today is
you have lots of different options before the Christian West. Some worked, some didn't work. Some were incredibly synchronistic, and some were a little more channeled. But the reality is that the world that we live in, no matter where you live in this world, is dramatically influenced by what we would say, progress, especially scientific and technological progress of the West, as the West is living in its last years of Christendom and Christian influence. And so we can look at it and we can see, maybe you want to start with Martin Luther and the Reformation. Like I don't remember if it was off tape or on tape last week, I said some people attributed it even to Martin Luther translating the Bible into German and the popularity of that German Bible. And now all sorts of people get to have different opinions about particular theological topics that they wouldn't have been really asked their opinion on before. In that way, sort of the self is made the arbiter. And once the self is made the arbiter, you can really trace the sort of progression away from deferring to God, even if it's through a priest, to deferring to self for all things. And the further and further away you get to the deferring from God, kind of where we are now, you have to start actually, we've come all the way over the hump of the bell curve and we're on the other side. And you have to start looking for other things to defer to, because you actually can't know about everything like you thought you could, especially in an age where there's so much information. One of the problems with our age, there's so much information available, you can't consume it all and understand it all and process it all. And so now we're on the other side, and you get this part of secularism that you sort of get deferrals to experts, which is now being called expertism. You know, you get this deferral to science, which is called scientism. You get the deferral to an ethic called woke, which Adam coined wokeism.
Wokest.
Wokest.
There is the wokeism word out there. Wokest, okay. Though.
Yeah. And so you have all of these deferrals, and they are in a way reaching up, right? That's the classic human disease when it comes to God, is to reach up rather than acknowledging his reaching down. They're all reaching up to try to grab hold of the one that is the super authority that can kind of be claimed over all things. And we see that. And I think that's what you have going on in secularism, but in a lot of ways, it's a kind of going back to before there was this sort of one unified powerhouse of Christendom that eventually influenced things in the whole world by means of their science and the technology that kind of spread everywhere, and thus then the information that spread everywhere. You're on the downslope of that for sure. I think people don't know how to adjust away from it. It's so funny in a way, but just so bizarre and sad too, that how Adam started this is that in the past, it was very normal to look for explanations for things and to look to God for those explanations. And now you're actually kind of an oddball if you take, and the further you take that, the more of an oddball you are. right?
Yeah, yeah. That I don't know how long what you just said lasted, but there's just a lot of juicy stuff there. One thing I was initially thinking is, I forget how you put it, but we're on the tail end of, I think, to be honest, we're past it, but there are still some vestiges of Christendom hanging around. And I think Christians, back to like the original question, why should we be aware of secularism? I think we really need, Christians generally really need to get past and understand that we do not live in Christendom. America is not a Christian nation.
We did a whole show on that, and I think people should go listen to it.
Yeah, and I'm not like, you know, offering up a toast to that or anything like that, but once you realize that we never really have been a Christian nation in a legal, political sense, you know, that's actually even prohibited by the First Amendment.
I mean, in a cultural sense, like church attendance in the United States has always been abysmal compared to maybe not Europe today, but right. historically, right? And stuff like that.
But historically, I mean, I think there was always at least deference or respect for the church, broadly conceived, and, you know, and like you suggested, Caleb, the West, in many ways, certainly before, let's say, the Enlightenment, so early 17th century or mid-17th century, was shaped by a version or versions of Christianity. And then the Enlightenment comes around, and the West is, you know, there was a sort of Enlightenment principles are fused with Christian principles. Those sort of vestiges or artifacts still kind of stick.
Like Elizabethan England, right? Enlightenment principles, or not Victorian England. Sorry, Victorian England. Enlightenment principles fused with sort of Christian principles.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I mean, looking at it with hindsight, there's something beautiful about it. But
when you're looking at scientific progress and you're thanking God for giving you the reason to help you discover some of the scientific discoveries that you've made, there's something really beautiful about that we've completely lost.
Yeah.
And when it's brought up, it's mocked in a funny way that it was never intended, right? So I saw somebody sort of mocking people online who had posted like, thank God for the recovery of my aunt from cancer or something like that. And this person was mocking that, you know, God didn't save that person's aunt, chemotherapy and doctors did. And what's, you know, if you look at actual...
But who called the doctors?
Yeah, like, but if you look at the sort of development of Christianity on this, the thanking God is also for creating rational creatures who value each other's lives and seek to serve each other in medical capacity, invent technologies that extend life, stuff like that. And it's always mocked as something so far out and mystical and superstitious, where when you get down to it, it may be simply saying, you know, God, this is the remnants of a good creation that God created that is innovative and reasonable and cares for the other creature, etc.
Yeah.
We should do one on why you should understand the doctrine of vocation and talk about why people thank God when their family with cancer is healed, and how this has to do with the vocation of the scientist who developed the chemo or the radiation treatment and the doctor who administered it and the nurses who held the bedpan as they were puking from the chemo, and on and on and on.
And that none of those people have to be Christians to be objects of the good use of God.
They are the masks of God, whether they know it or not. Just like the person that delivers your food when you say, give us this day our daily bread. They don't necessarily know that they're participating in God answering your prayer.
Oh, yeah, or the Babylonians, you know, conquering your people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Turks.
Or the Turks. Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of like that original question, why should we be aware of secularism? Back to that point I made about we got to really get past this notion that we live in Christendom or a Christian nation or something like that, because you're never really going to understand where you are until you get past that. So, I think we talked about this on our show concerning low anthropology or something like that. How the stuff we see going on, even the really radical stuff in Caleb's world, the Twitterverse or whatever you guys call it. But you know, the spectacles out there about like LGBTQIA plus stuff and all that. None of that. I mean, it should maybe appall us. Not maybe, it should appall us, but it shouldn't really surprise you that people fueled by an ideology are pushing the envelope every day. Because what would hold them back? There's nothing. So everything's flattened,
right,
in the secular arena. So right. Anything can go.
Yeah.
And
I think the problem is that the lie that we were sold as we were moving into secularism was a lie of understanding that we should all just sort of take the time to listen to one another, yeah, and understand each other's position and be okay with it. Who cares if what they do in their bedroom over there? They're not going to care what you do with your wife. Don't care what they do with, you know, whatever or whomever over here. But that was a lie. Or I don't even know if it was an intentional
lie. The broader lie is that secularism was going to get rid of all sort of power structures, and that if you just lived a personal life where you didn't assert power over other people, they wouldn't assert power over you.
If you if you don't proselytize me with Christianity, I won't proselytize you with
my
sexuality or whatever.
Christians on the whole were willing to lay down this external power structure. Secularism actually allowed, instead of neutrality, new powers to rise up.
Yep.
And so, like Adam said, nature abhors a vacuum. When people said, okay, we'll all be equals, tyrants came in and said, no, I'm your king.
Well, but tolerance is always a lie, because you're not going to change the nature of the sinful person, no matter how secular or detached from God they are.
Yeah.
They think they are.
Yeah. I mean, I would not. I'm not advocating that we all go looking to fight culture wars around every corner, at all. But I do think when we've been placed in this secular culture with all sorts of secularist ideologies, including wokeism. You know, there are those wokeist people. I just have to throw my word out there again.
He's trying to get a TM here.
Right now,
he has to prove
website.
Yeah, he has to prove commercial use. So,
I don't think it's been helpful for me to understand that in knowing that we don't live in Christian America or whatever, it helps me navigate this world without getting uptight and angry at every corner. It should not surprise us that our non-Christian neighbors don't think like Christians, which is sort of like a no-brainer, you know?
That should not be shocking.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the thing is that I think was the church, and again, I'm not advocating culture wars, nor am I critiquing some culture skirmishes or whatever, but sometimes when Christians face or square off with the culture, they make us all look like fools when they act like a bunch of spazzes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I would think
to use the technical.
Well, and it's like we said in the episode that we did on this, is that if you're fighting culture wars, quote unquote, for the sake of regaining the United States as a Christian nation, you're really on the wrong track, because you've really not understood the history of the United States, the history of Christianity, the purpose of Christianity. There's a lot of things that are being misunderstood there. That's different than saying, okay, I'm now going, you know, did I buy the lie that if I didn't evangelize, that they wouldn't, you know, proselytize to the point where they try to take over the entire culture and squash the real purpose of Christianity too, which is the proclamation of the gospel of Christ.
Here's
Jesus.
The thing I think that Christians mess up with, quote, culture war. And it gets to our vocation thing, which is, I think too often they fight it from the public perspective that they are doing it to save, serve, and protect the church, instead of doing it from the position of their civil vocations, where they say, the reason I care about these social issues is because I'm a citizen, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm an employee or an employer, and these practices are harmful to my way of life, the quality of life, for me, my family, the people who depend on me, and the people I'm dependent on. And instead, they make it about doing something for Christ in the church, where the church does not demand this particular war. It is at war with the world, with something different, the gospel, and where making decisions or fighting the culture or voting a particular way is about doing what you believe is best for the well-being of people here and now.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reality. That's one of the reasons I said it's hard to do this episode without doing something on vocation too, because the answer here is, if you're going to sort of take your stand with Christ and the proclamation of the gospel, and if you're going to defend those things that you've been called to defend within your particular vocations.
Yeah, it's,
and that's enough.
And that's enough.
And I think it's
you can't save the whole world. Christ already
did. Yeah. just another thing he's stealing from you. Yeah, it's, I think that distinction is just difficult to make. And I think you do have to be, you know, vocation is one of those background things, but it's one of those ones where if we were more intentional about it and more catechetical about it, I believe you could see some of this where the church is not the location of the war for people. Maybe the civil realm is, and actually church and the church becomes the one respite from that particular civil and social battle, where you can come to receive rest, receive forgiveness from any mistakes that you've made while making those rational decisions and things like that. And also hoping that it's that place where your enemy in the societal and cultural war will also eventually come to rest.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we've
word.
Yeah, I think we've hit a spot here where we're sort of acknowledging the fact that you need to be aware of secularism because it's already all around you, and you probably are aware of its effects on you. So maybe sort of understand a little bit of how we got here, and then understand that if you feel like you need to do something, do the things that you're actually called to do. Mm. You know.
Yeah, we need to capture that. I wish we could do a, what do they call it, a pull quote?
They call them pull quotes.
Should be a pull quote. Yeah. That's it in a nutshell, yeah. I think, at least from the way we approach these things. And one of the things that you said, you need to understand where it comes from. Can I ask a question? Because I think we do have some time. I think you referred to this earlier. There are those mostly Catholic polemicists who will argue that secularism finds its origin in the Protestant Reformation, in particular with Luther, with the advent or his assertion of the two kingdom doctrine. Mm. And this, the view that we live in, you know, two kingdoms, or there's a vertical life we live before God and a horizontal life. And I mean, Luther will say things when it comes to living in the horizontal space in terms of constructing things, marrying, all these civil sort of pursuits. He'll say reason is enough in this arena. You know, the rational man is self-sufficient in the temporal realm. And so you get these Catholic polemicists who'll say that's the initial impetus towards this pretended neutral space in which an ideology or ideologies are going to start filling. Do you ever... I don't know
if sympathize with that argument.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I do actually a little bit. But at the same time, I don't think Luther's wrong, right? Because what he's doing in the two kingdoms, and back in my day, we'd call this the two kingdoms theory, right? So now this is called a two kingdoms doctrine a lot of times. And I'm okay either way on that. So don't send Caleb angry emails.
Please.
But the reality is that he was, I think he was trying to figure out oftentimes how the scriptures speak about this whole situation too, with the acknowledgement that God uses the righteous and the unrighteous alike to rule over this earth and to keep in reins the effects of sin. And they, if you say that it's only through the church and church's influence on government and society that this can happen, you're taking out whole parts of the world where God uses non-Christian leaders to do the same thing. And I think that this is where you know, where in Romans 13, Paul is telling Christians to submit to Roman authority, because the Roman authorities have the power of the sword, and they use that power of sword for good. Now, you couldn't say that within sort of that trad Catholic framework that you're talking about that criticizes two kingdoms. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that it's never going to go a direction that makes us in a particular society in a direction that makes us uncomfortable or that we don't like or nostalgic for how it was before when the government itself was less secular, we think. I think what happens a lot is you get sort of anecdotal examples to try to prove that the idea itself was wrong. And the idea itself isn't wrong because I think it's really represented in scripture, you know, prior to the Roman Catholic Church having its fingers in
everything,
secular government.
And honestly, yeah. honestly, in many ways, losing control during the time of Luther, not just because of Luther. I mean, a lot of the, you know, we've done some of this on Outlaw God in recent episodes too. A lot of the back and forth with Erasmus showed that the best thing they had for thinking they could control culture was penance, and it wasn't working. Like, anyways, so
shocker.
Shocker. Like Erasmus is trying to undo the sin of his own conception as a bastard by in an institutional church that existed before he was born, maybe being stronger after he died, and it wasn't going to play out.
In all the nice ways we found to say things these days, there's not been a good way to say like illegitimate son or bastard. Both are not PC. I'm not saying it's your fault, but I'm just saying we think we would have found something for that by this point within our secular world. I haven't heard it.
I have to say, Scott, your description of the two kingdom doctrine or theory or whatever is, and it's the distinction between Luther trying to describe what he finds in the data of scripture and the way it plays out is extremely helpful. I asked the question because I've always, like you said or suggested, I've always kind of wrestled with that because it kind of, the argument, that Catholic argument makes a little sense to me, like a 30,000 foot view of things. But then as I've been thinking about it recently, as I've been thinking about secularism, is I'm thinking, wait a minute, this whole distinction of the two realms goes way back.
Yes.
To St. Augustine. And right. you can really see a
city of God, city of men.
And yeah, and, I mean, before, so St. Augustine, what, he's late 4th, early 5th century. I think he dies 430 AD. Go back a century earlier to Eusebius, that church historian, so early 4th century. And you're, for example, when Emperor Constantine is coronated as emperor, the sole emperor of Rome, he writes this in praise of Constantine. And he regards, it's very clear, and I think this is the way the Eastern Orthodox still, at least in theory, views things, that the world is unitary. There are no two kingdoms or two realms. You know, there's just one realm. And then a century later with Augustine, then you do get that distinction. And you get it from popes too. Pope Gelasius in the late 5th century in the two swords doctrine, you know, that God has given two swords to one to the Pope, the spiritual sword, and the secular sword or the civil sword to the emperor and so on. So those Catholic polemicists, I think they haven't done their homework. They're actually doing a polemic because they don't like Luther. They're not actually doing history. They're not actually trying to understand the roots of secularism because they're afraid of what they might find if they dig into their own tradition.
I mean, it's worth noting that Luther constantly noted the secularism of the church of his time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I mean, like the Southern Renaissance is much more secular than the Northern humanists.
It's all art and architecture.
It is, and it was, and it was more only the return to the classical world than the Northern Renaissance, which, you know, the Northern Reformation does obviously go back to classical authors, but in the South it was the infatuation. And if we know anything about the classical world, it is as depraved as the time we live in now in all of the ways, sexual, ethical, you know, moral. And so that's where that hotbed really took off first. Like the Reformation in Northern Europe was Christendom for another until the dying, you know, that Italian Renaissance was much more secular, I would think.
Yeah, and in Luther's Two Kingdom Doctrine, though there is this Weltlich, this worldly, temporal, secular arena, it still was under God.
Yes.
God ruled over that kingdom in a different way than he rules over the church.
Well, that's the point. That's the
natural
point
law and reason and so on. But that, like, Caleb, you're right. That, boy, the Italian Renaissance, art and architecture and Plato, like, there's I don't know if it's huge, but there's a revival of Platonic philosophy and
Greek life, looking at Plato for insights into ethics and learning, but like literally emulation of ancient life in culture. That's the birth of modern secularism.
Do you have a juicy example?
I mean, do you? You're obviously thinking of one.
Well, I think I might. I mean, I know there are, like, in terms of architecture, the historians who focus on this sort of thing will illustrate how, like, their villas are start to be constructed in Italy, and all sorts of interesting things take place in these villas, including sexual things. And there's all sorts of experimentation, if you will,
with the purpose of some of the
things
island
outside
villas.
The norms.
Yeah, it's the purpose of some of the island villas, because there was actually like a sexual sort of norm within Roman culture that people wanted outside of. Especially, we're talking, I mean, I'm sure it happened down on the lower levels of society too, but on the whole, you're talking about sort of like the aristocracy kind of level. Mm-hmm. But I mean, one of the purpose of the island villas was to get out of Rome to go do crazy stuff.
I mean,
nobody you'd be out away from the watchful eye of the papal guard or whatever, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, Dante is before Luther and is criticizing the church in many sections, and so
he puts popes in hell.
Yeah,
that's the same level as Muhammad.
Right. You know, yeah,
it's outstanding.
But you know, it wasn't new that people were challenging the authority of particular church institutions even yet.
Yeah.
So.
Mm. All right. I think we did that one. Did a good job on that one, if I do say so myself.
It was certainly an interesting one. I mean, I think we did. I mean, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back here, but there is a danger, right? Like, when you hear Christian podcasts do the secularism thing, I will say that it often becomes the case for the new crusade.
Yeah.
And so, like, and we obviously, I don't want to completely bog on those people, because we obviously have a lot in common with the way we think the world should be with other Christians who sort of mourn the death of these things. So I don't want to mog on them too harshly, but that's not really what we hope that the Thinking Fellows is as a podcast. So, cool. So hopefully helpful and interesting to listeners. If you thought so, and if you're going to keep listening to the Thinking Fellows, we would love for you to become a subscriber to the show. You can subscribe for free in the Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Casts, and a bunch of Podcast Addict, and a bunch of other podcasting platforms. So you can find your favorite app and look up for the Thinking Fellows, and it will be free in all of those apps to subscribe. You can also support the show by going to 1517.org/donate. And when you do that, you not only support the Thinking Fellows, but the rest of the projects at 1517.org. Thank you for listening. We will catch you next time. Bye.